Hello and welcome, Breakthrough Success listeners. I'm your host, Mark Guberti, and this is the podcast where you'll learn how to achieve the breakthroughs you've been looking for in your business and life. If you want to grow your content brand, you'll definitely want to add my latest book, Content Marketing Secrets, to your reading list. This book will teach you how to create, promote, and optimize your content for growth and revenue. You can get your copy at Mark Guberti, that is Mark with a C, so markguberti.com/book. And now, let's dive right into the show. For episode 78 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast, we are going to talk about accelerating our brands with the help of affiliate partners with our guest, Robert Glaser. Robert is the author of Performance Partnerships, The Checkered Past, Changing Present, and Exciting Future of Affiliate Marketing. He is also the founder and managing director of Acceleration Partners, an industry-leading affiliate marketing agency. And his agency has attracted many high-profile clients, including Adidas, Reebok, Gymboree, Target, ModCloth, and many others. So let's learn a lot about getting affiliate partners to help accelerate our brands. Robert Glaser is the guy, and now is my pleasure to welcome him to the show.
Thanks, Mark. Excited to be here.
Robert, it's so great to have you on the Breakthrough Success Podcast. And before we go really deep into growing our brands with the help of affiliate partners, I'd love to get some backstory. So what exactly got you started with affiliate marketing and utilizing affiliate partners to expand your brand?
Sure. I became an affiliate almost by accident in two parts of my life. I was working at a company that was running centers for new and expecting parents and this emerging card company that did birth announcements and holiday cards gave us a code and said, hey, will you promote this to your members? And we had mostly first-time parents, and we started making a lot of money off of it. And then when I left there, I set up a website. I started promoting for them. I always worked with growth stage businesses, so I understood the importance of customer acquisition to a business. And really sort of learned about how the affiliate model could work when done correctly. And I actually went to that company and said, look, I'm doing really well with this. I brokered a few deals for them. Do you guys have a program? They said, we don't have a program. I went and met with a founder, and he said, hey, can you help us with a program? So then I dove in and learned about running programs from the merchant side, and ended up growing a pretty large program for that company called Tiny Prints, which was then sold to Shutterfly a few years later for over $300 million. And a lot of the people who worked in Tiny Prints or around or saw the program we built called us and wanted to work with us. And that really led me down the merchant side of affiliate marketing.
Robert, thank you for sharing some background about how you got started. And one of the things about attracting affiliate partners is they want to make sure that they're promoting an offer that's going to lead to sales. So you'll see many affiliates promoting similar kinds of offers that tend to work really well. And it's less likely that they'll promote something new and upcoming as opposed to something that they know is going to generate solid revenue. So how can we optimize our offerings to make them more attractive to partners?
Yeah, so you talk about an offer, but I would also say it's a brand. I think what you said is totally true. We have a lot of companies call, hey, we're a couple hundred thousand in sales, we're just about to launch, can we launch an affiliate program? And our answer is always the same. You know, you really should probably do organic search and social and get your pricing and your product and everything right. And you need a little bit of a brand, because any good affiliate has valuable shelf space, and you're basically asking for that shelf space on a performance basis. And so they don't want to take a huge risk on you as an unknown thing. And a lot of times companies are tweaking their product and tweaking their pricing, and that's not something that you want to take partners through that process. So I think an affiliate program is best done once you've proven your model, it's starting to scale, you have enough brand awareness that you can go to people and say, hey, we're this fast up and growing brand in X, work with us. I try to get people off the sort of offer concept and more about a relationship. And I think in a relationship with a good merchant, they should be constantly giving you new content or campaigns or ideas about what is going on with their company or product that you can take and market to your customers. That to me is a healthy affiliate relationship, and looks a little bit more like business development and partner development than just kind of pumping offers out to the universe.
Robert, thank you for making that clear distinction. I mean, offer is something that is commonly used and being able to make a lot of commission for sale, but being able to view it as a brand and building the relationship, that's definitely going to result in more value and a stronger connection when we do get partners. But in order to make all this happen, we have to find and recruit partners in the first place. So when you have a brand in place, how are you finding and recruiting partners who will help to promote the brand?
It's a great question. So we build sort of a partner persona. I think a lot of people confuse their affiliates and their customers a lot. So we would say, who are the types of partners that would do well? And we would build sort of four or five personas, and then we would recruit in those areas. So we'd look who's already referring people to the brand organically, who seems to like it. Then we could run lookalike type modeling against that. And then we have a few different services that we use that know how to find people and influencers and affiliates, see who's already an affiliate. And then we have a pretty big CRM system ourselves after doing this for so many years, where we've tagged people and made it clear which programs they like and which genres they like. So it's usually that combination. We figure out the partner persona first. We go and look who is already sort of promoting the brand that we could turn into a partner. And then we go through our own list and database and find people we already work with who are a match. And then we go out there and recruit based on certain lists or services and try to and test those personas. And usually if we have four or five personas, two or three of them will do really well. And then we'll put more time and energy into those and sort of shut down the other ones. But that's the key difference, I think, in a well-run affiliate program, is that you have real resources against recruiting. Most programs are just set it or forget it, or they wait for the squeaky wheel to call. They're either managed by someone in-house who's got five channels they're managing, or an agency or network that has 20 accounts per person. And consistently we've seen results, and we always say it's not rocket science, but it's really just about staffing the recruiting element of the program and getting people both into the program and then getting them engaged.
And you mentioned something really important about not just getting people into the program, but also getting them engaged. And I've been part of several affiliate programs, and the ones that I tend to be the most successful at are the ones that have training that guide me through the process. And it's not just here's your link, it's white copy, good luck. It's a relationship that's being built. And I know that some affiliates, regardless of whether you're first time or you've been doing it for a while, those things like engagement definitely help. And I was wondering, with that in mind, how do you advise engaging with partners through the launch process in order to boost commissions?
Yeah, that's a great question. So a few things. One, we sort of think of it as you would like a CRM joining process. So you should have a waterfall of things that goes on after someone joins. We've actually found it's the same amount of work to recruit someone to a program as it is to get them active. But once they've made $100, then or sold $100, that's sort of a threshold of they're real and they have motivation. So the first thing we do is try to get people active right away, or have some in the recruiting, have something, some promotion or something that really encourages signing up and activating at the same time. But then we would probably, in a lot of cases, activate a lifecycle campaign, typical to what a retailer had for someone who signed up on their list but didn't buy something. So we'd have a series of offers and incentives, and we'd waterfall that, and we'd reach out. So affiliate marketing is half technology and it's half people. And depending on the size of the program, we might offer a webinar, we might offer a deal, we might reach out to see if they want to have a call, group people together, have sort of office hours. But yeah, it's not worth recruiting people if you can't get them to do stuff. And they're probably most motivated to get that going right when they sign up. So I think you have your best chance of trying to combine that. One thing we do is we try to get people the product to test or use, or some sort of discount to the store if it's different products, so that they can become a customer and also speak more authentically.
Robert, thank you for sharing those great insights on engaging affiliates so that they're able to have more successful promotions and better promote your brand based on the acquisition of more knowledge and you welcoming them with highly engaging material that is meant to train them. And when after the launch is over, some affiliates receive their commissions, others they may not have received the commission, but they're very excited about the future and possibly working together. But as weeks turn into months, it's possible for people to forget who you are if they are not in constant communication with you. So how would you continue the conversation with affiliates even when you're not launching new stuff and asking them to help out?
Yeah, I think you segment your audience and you provide them with useful content. So let's pretend you've signed up to be, you know, an Amazon affiliate, and that's probably too big for this example, but we'll go with it. And in the first week, I send you a bunch of book specials, and you're like, yeah, I don't really focus on books. And then the second week, I send you all the cool new Alexa products and the tips and things that you want. You're like, oh, you know what, Alexa, that's a good idea, because I see that you have a electronics category. So with some companies, you just may not be interested in some of the things they sell and others. So you may have signed up, but now you see this Alexa campaign. You're like, oh, I was just talking about the voice search and the future of voice. So this is perfect. I'll link to all those products. I think that is one thing that is misunderstood, and that affiliates often have different things that they like and don't like in different parts of their site. And you definitely, this is for a company that has multiple products, you definitely can't force feed certain stuff down there. And you're trying to make yourself available, but also they're the publisher. They know what they want. I've seen a lot of merchants try to force stuff and get them to write about stuff or say, hey, you should really talk about this. And it really shows that they haven't even looked at the website or what they focus on, right? So if Amazon, you know, wrote to you and said, hey, here are some cool books on leadership and culture you might want to promote, you'd say, great. If they sent you a whole bunch of kids' toys and they said, these toys are really hot and they're bestsellers, you'd be like, but that's not what I do. So I think that some programs make those mistakes a lot.
And I find that really interesting about segmenting the list, not just to say, okay, these are my affiliates, this is the rest of my list, but being able to segment affiliates based on some of the brands that they've supported in the past, so that you're giving them a more targeted communication, which will definitely help them make decisions on promoting brands that you decide to say that, hey, these brands can use your help. And in some cases, it's an evergreen offer. So Amazon Associates is in this case a good example, because it doesn't matter if it's January 1st or December 31st, you're always going to be able to promote Amazon affiliate links. So how would you get affiliates involved with an evergreen promotion?
Yeah, evergreen promotion, I'd probably create some banners, different text links, get that all out to them, explain how it converts, how it's best promoted. And particularly if it's a single product, you probably want to front load a lot of that. But one of the things that we've done in the past, I don't think publishers are using banners as much, but we would have these evergreen offers and banners, and we would say to people, this is the evergreen series. And when we want to change the offer or anything like that, we will just change it automatically, and you don't have to swap it out. So things that save publishers time, if you can, you know, give you a dynamic code towards an evergreen offer and say that this will always be the good offer. So if you're featuring it in certain places, we can change it on the back end. You don't need to change it. I think those are, and really, it's like what makes it easy for the publisher? How can you do the hard work as the merchant so it's just easier on the publisher?
Robert, thank you for going deep into the evergreen offer. Well, in this case, brand. I mean, I'm still getting used to it, but evergreen is definitely something different from a launch where it has a very set deadline. And I mean, you could promote that for as long as you want, but you have to have the desire as an affiliate to promote that. And that part of that is based on how the affiliate program is set up and how it communicates the brand and the product that you would be able to promote. And you've organized a lot of affiliate programs, and you've attracted the high profile clients, as I mentioned before. And with that in mind, what do you believe makes a successful affiliate program?
From the merchant side?
Yes.
I think great relationships and great technology. So the four pillars of a performance partnership that I identify in the book, which is my attempt to sort of say, kind of differentiate from a traditional affiliate program, is that you have a CPA payout, or COD, cash on delivery. I think that's the core of an affiliate program. You have transparency. And you have a relationship partnership, which is a little different from 10 years ago, when a lot of just, it was very transactional. It was like, hey, you don't even have a right to know what I'm doing. And then real-time tracking and payment. So I think those are the four elements of a quality program. What I've generally found is that relationship, good relationship, resourcing the program, putting, you know, people that are on compliance and people who are good at creative and relationship on relationship, and also great technology. That's what makes it work for a partner. If you have easy to use links, dynamic things, you know, using technology to make it as, I hate to use this word, but programmatic as possible or automated as possible. But then you have those people in there that are, know the person, know what they like. I mean, some of our best campaigns have come out of the account manager really knowing the publisher and knowing something that will be appealing to them. You know, they hear someone at Reebok say, hey, we've got all these shoes that we need to liquidate. And they say, oh, we could go to someone like Deals Plus or Slick Deals, and we know they'd set up a special section for us, and we could probably liquidate all this inventory in 2 days. So you call them and you do a deal. That's very different than just throwing the link up. So I think that knowing your publishers is important. Having the technology, really good technology, is what makes it easier for everyone to transact together at scale. Another example of just being integrated with the marketing team is a few years ago, we worked with a company called ModCloth, and Michelle Obama was seen wearing a ModCloth dress, and their PR team mentioned this, worked with the marketing team and the affiliate team, and we got all kinds of stuff out to all these fashion publishers saying, hey, Michelle Obama was seen in this dress, people are going to be talking about it, it's from ModCloth, here's a link, you can buy it. And I think there was 200 posts within a few hours. So that's more of a campaign. And I think we try to think more of how do we build campaigns for our partners to work with.
Robert, thank you for sharing with us what makes a successful affiliate program on the merchant side. And this is a question that the upcoming one applies not only to affiliates, like people, merchants and affiliate marketers, but also people as a whole. So I feel like when we have a goal that we want to achieve, we don't always get there. There always seems to be something holding us back for certain goals. Some people are able to just power through, but for the people who feel stuck, who feel like they're not reaching their full potential, what do you believe holds most people back from reaching their full potential?
I think fear and misplaced doubt and self-limitation. I know that's been true for me, and most people they've told themselves a narrative about something that they can do or not do, and they've sort of, they're defeated before they started. I mean, it's the reason I started you probably have seen, I've started a Friday post called Friday Forward, FridayFWD.com. It goes to about 30,000 leaders across the world each week. But the point is to both be inspirational and challenging at the same time about getting people past their self limits and doubt, and also outside of their comfort zone. I think that the more you're in your comfort zone, the more you just get comfortable and you don't want to push. So I think a lot of people are just afraid of trying, or they got into a little bit of failure and they didn't like the feeling and they pulled back. But I know it's been the story of my journey and my company, and I really try to work on that for myself and for my team.
And throughout the journey of reaching our full potential, obviously only to expand on it once we reach what we believe is our full potential, there are going to be certain challenges along the journey. And one question that I love asking people is, for a big challenge that you faced in your journey and a powerful lesson you learned during that challenge.
Yeah, I have an article I wrote this Thursday on this, but a few years ago we were struggling with our growth as a company. I think it was a lot of two step forwards, one step back, and I was sort of frustrated. I don't think I was being clear about what I wanted, and I think so people didn't know what was expected of them. So I sort of went off and wrote something called A Vivid Vision. Spent about 3 months saying, this is what the company is going to look like in 3 years. And this is where I think resilience comes from, being very resolute in where you want to go. I think we're resilient when we're doing something that's tied to our core. We know we want it and it's worth fighting for. I think we're not resilient when it's not something we really, really want. So I worked on this document, really rolled it out to the whole company. And I said, look, this is where we're going. This is what we're going to do. If you're excited about this, great. If you're not, this is, we kind of pared down our core values. This is probably the time to step off. And some people did. And we are now about 18 months into that plan. We're achieving everything that we said we're going to do. We've got new people come in, some people left, which is fine. And we're really executing on that plan and everyone is on the same page. And that's the biggest difference, I think. A lot of times I think people are on the same page, but they're not. But I, in this case, I really created the same page for everyone to look at and say, if you believe in this, this will be exciting. It'll be really hard, but it'll be exciting and come on this journey. And if you don't, again, this is free chance for you to step off the roller coaster. So that wasn't easy to do. I mean, there were relationships, there was things that we had to stop doing. I think everyone heads into New Year's with tons of things that they want to achieve and goals and start doing. One of the things I always write about in my articles around New Year's is that your stop doing list and both the things you're going to stop doing and the people you need to stop doing and all these things. It's as much about what you don't do as do. And I know I've seen you write about that on your site as well.
Robert, thank you for sharing with us that big challenge and the powerful lesson you learned during that challenge. And as many Breakthrough Success listeners know, I'm a really big bookworm, so I'll read as many as 10 to 30 books in a given month. And with that in mind, I was wondering if you could share with us three great books that would help us grow our businesses.
Am I allowed to throw in a plug for my own book?
Go for it.
All right. Well, I'd start with Performance Partnerships if you want to learn how to scale your business using the affiliate marketing principles for marketing, business development, partner marketing. You can get the first chapter for free at performance-partnerships.com. The other book I read recently that I really like is Principles by Ray Dalio. It's a great book on just knowing your principles and work in life. And I think similar to what I said before, if you're really clear about what you stand for, it makes all the decisions about what you do and don't do really easy. And then another book that I recommend to a lot of people that I think is a key to success is Understanding Cognitive Dissonance. There's a book called Mistakes Were Made But Not By Me. And it really gets to why the core of why we repeat mistakes and why we don't learn from failure. I think you have to learn from failure to grow. So that book has been super helpful for me to see when I'm trying to distance myself from a failure or other people. I think if you get a understanding and control over cognitive dissonance, it's a big factor in success.
Robert, thank you for sharing with us those awesome book recommendations. Those will be at the show notes at markgubberti.com/E78. And before we get to the end where you share with us where we can find you on the web, I've asked you a bunch of questions throughout this episode. And I'm wondering, what is one question that you believe we need to be asking ourselves more often?
What should I not be doing?
That is an interesting one, and I definitely see how that can make you a lot more productive.
Yeah, I think it is. You could think about that question in the tactical sense or more in the philosophical sense.
Well, Robert, thank you for providing us that question that we should be asking ourselves. And I also appreciate you taking the time to share all of your great insights throughout this episode. And for all the listeners wondering, where can we find you on the web?
Sure. You can sign up if you want to follow me each week at Friday Forward, which is fridayfwd.com, or you can check out accelerationpartners.com, which is our business website, or the Performance Partnerships website, which is performance-partnerships.com.
All right, Breakthrough Success listeners, those links and more will be at markgubberti.com/E78, where the show notes are. Robert, it was such a pleasure to have you on the Breakthrough Success podcast. Thank you for sharing your insights with us today.
Thanks, Mark.
To never miss an episode, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on whatever player you are using. If you are a regular listener and haven't done so already, I would greatly appreciate it if you could give this podcast a review or a rating. Two ways you could do this are through markgubberti.com/iTunes or markgubberti.com/Stitcher. That ends this episode. Don't forget, dream big, achieve greatness, and unlock your potential today.
Want your tweets to get retweeted to my 360,000 Twitter followers? All you have to do is say something nice about the Breakthrough Success podcast and include the link markgubberti.com/iTunes. Once you've posted that tweet, email me, mark@markgubberti.com, and I will retweet your tweet to my 360,000 followers.
This podcast is a production done by Mark Gubberti. For more insights, head on over to markgubberti.com.